members of the media and our distinguished guests. We only have two items on the agenda, but I will request that after this meeting, MPs remain behind so that we can deal with the issues relating to the constitution of the subcommittee on correctional services. But the agenda items are as follows. It's opening, it's apologies, it's the issue relating to the request by the Chief Whip of the official opposition, Honorable Steenhuisen, and then it's the briefing of the appointment process of the Deputy Public Protector, and closure. That is the agenda. Is there any seconder for the agenda? Okay, thanks. So far we have one apology from Mr. Swart. Honorable Glenis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apologize on behalf of Mr. Horn. He's unavailable for this for this week.
For this meeting or for this week? For the week, okay.
Can you just note the absence of the EFF?
Maybe they will join us late. Usually they do send an apology. Let me check my phone. Fine, we have received the two apologies. Honorable members, the programming committee met last week and agreed that rules need to be developed to effect processes in terms of section 194 subsection 1 of the constitution. Since the matter was referred to us by the speaker, the matter of Honorable Steenhuisen, we need to take a resolution as the committee that this matter be referred to the Rules Committee so that rules and procedures can be developed. The resolution is necessary so that the Speaker can refer the matter to the Rules Committee as soon as it is practically possible. This is what we are requesting in terms of agenda number one with regard to the matter of the public protector, as it was requested by the Chief Whip of the official opposition, Honorable Steenhuisen. Honorable Nwala.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think what we have just presented is only fair, and it takes us into a responsible manner in terms of handling this matter. So what we don't as a committee and lawmakers preside over a process that will be highly litigious. So, Chair, I think I want to move in support of what we have just presented, that let's take it to the programming committee to at least construct a reasonable process for us to preside over the matter. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Nwala. Honorable Glenis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We support the resolution to refer the matter to the Speaker so that you can refer the matter to the Rules Committee. But we would request that it be made very clear to the Speaker with the necessary respect that the matter is very urgent, and that the Speaker refers it on an urgent basis, and that the Rules Committee is asked to deal with it on an urgent basis so that it can come back here and that we can deal with the matter, the substantive matter of the removal of the public protector.
Thank you, Chair.
I think much as I agree with the view that we have to refer the matter to the rules committee, but I also I would like to propose that when those rules are made, when they deal with this issue, we must make sure that we look broader into even those that are the element of making sure that we expand those rules to cover even others, those who we're not supposed to consider it only on this one of the public protector. Must also make sure that we check even those that will be coming after in terms of us having to undergo this process of removing the similar case of the public protector. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Jale. That is why we are saying that those are rules and procedures in terms of Section 194, subsection 1. It covers the Chapter 9 institutions, all of them. Okay. Now, I think there is a general agreement. We will ask the Secretariat to write the letter so that I can sign it today, so that the Speaker can receive it today. And we will request that this matter be attended to urgently. Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Item number 2, briefing on the appointment of the Deputy Public Protector. Ms. Silkstone, our content advisor, will brief us. Let me take this opportunity to welcome Honorable Msimang and Honorable Mfuken, who have just joined us. We are waiting.
Good morning. Just let me know if I'm speaking too softly, because I have a soft voice and it gets softer when I'm a bit nervous. The committee has been asked to initiate a process to appoint a new DPP, Deputy Public Protector, when the position becomes vacant.
Can you bring your mic closer to your...
Okay. When the position becomes vacant at the end of the present DPP, Advocate Malunga's term of office. Slide number two, then slide number three just gives a background around what the public protector does. We'll move on to slide number four, which deals with the actual appointment process. And the appointment process is found primarily in section 2A of the Public Protector Act. And there's also reference to the committee in section 21B. So the president, on the recommendation of the National Assembly, shall appoint a deputy public protector for a period as determined at the time of the appointment, but not more than 7 years. And the DPP is eligible to serve a further term. The National Assembly shall refer the nomination of a person to a committee, and then the National Assembly shall recommend a person nominated by the committee and approved by the National Assembly by a resolution supported by a majority of its members. So there's some similarities between this process for the public protector and some differences. The process to appoint a DPP is found solely in the Public Protector Act. It's not found in the Constitution. And unlike the PP, a DPP is eligible to serve an additional term. On the issue of public participation, the involvement of the public, civil society, in the recommendation process can be facilitated in terms of Section 59(1) of the Constitution. And broadly, that allows for Section 59(1) refers to or provides for public access and involvement in the processes of the National Assembly. And here, it's just although the position of the DP is not created in the Constitution, in the case of appointments to the Chapter 9 institutions, Section 1932 of the Constitution encourages the involvement of civil society in the recommendation process. In slide number 7, I quote section 2A4, which sets out the selection criteria, but the next slide just summarizes nicely. And the DPP must be a South African citizen. He or she must be a fit and proper person to hold the office, and can be a practicing advocate or attorney with at least 10 years' experience. Qualified to be admitted and has lectured in law at a university for at least 10 years, have specialized knowledge or experience in the administration of justice, public administration, or public finance for at least 10 years, an MP for at least 10 years, and have any combination of those experiences for at least 10 years. And just with regard to the selection criteria, it's very similar to the PP, except with the PP's case, that section provides for a judge of the court. Just to give an idea of what powers the Deputy Public Protector has, the Act provides that the Public Protector is responsible for delegating powers to the Deputy Public Protector. However, the Act also provides that the DPP will stand in for the PP if the PP is unable to perform his or her functions, or while the position is vacant. The Act also provides that the PP is assisted by the DPP. And then just something else that the committee might want to consider, Section 2A5 of the Act addresses the issue of remuneration and conditions of employment, and says the remuneration and other terms and conditions of employment of the Deputy Public Protector shall from time to time be determined by the National Assembly upon the advice of the committee. Now, around the suggested process, there are no formal guidelines around appointment processes. There are various practices that have been established over the years. And particularly in the Fifth Parliament, we had a lot of thought around the process of appointing the public protector, and then that was taken up.
Can you hear clearly?
Am I talking too fast?
And can you also acknowledge the presence of the Chief Whip of the Majority Party, Honourable Majordina? You can proceed, Ms. Sasto.
So as I was saying, there are no formal processes or guidelines around, well, there are processes, but there are no formal guidelines around the appointment processes. And so it's for the committee to determine its own process. But I thought it might be helpful to look at the practices that have happened in the last 2 years around appointments to the Public Protector, the Human Rights Commissioner, and also to the CGE. So basically, your process can be divided into three stages. The one is your preparatory stage, and that will cover the calling for nominations, your public participation, any requests for additional information from the candidates, selection of candidates, and screening. Then we have our interview process and our deliberations around that, and then finally we have reporting to the House. So when you look at your preparatory stage, obviously the matter is referred to the committee. We look at the terms of reference, that's found in your ATC. We look at the background, the legal prescripts. We might even look at any other provisions of the enabling legislation that might be important. For example, we might need to find out something more around the remuneration. And then also, we would need to then devise our program. The date at which the office expires would also influence your program. You then go to calling for nominations, and that is around your, you would advertise your call for in all the print and electronic media. And then the content of that advert is then subject to the legal prescripts, and then there might be some things that we want to add as well around screening and so on. What was really new in the last Parliament was the facilitation of public involvement in our processes. So there was there was an enormous amount of interest around appointments, and what we did was we actually allowed for public comment. But what we did was we placed the names of the candidates onto the website, Parliament's website, with their CVs. We redacted all personal information, but allowed the public to send in comments. We gave a 1 to 2 week process for that. But, you know, the drawback is it does create, well, the drawback is that you need to deal with personal information very carefully. And then the other thing is that it does create quite a lot of challenges depending on the number of comments that we get. Another innovation was that we sent an additional questionnaire to all candidates, and that basically the questionnaire covered things like their personal details, their education, the history of their education and tertiary education, their career history, and then there would be some form of, if they needed to make any kind of disclosures that they wanted to make to the committee. And then there was another thing where we started probing into their motivation and so on. And if we decide to go down that route, then there is a copy of the questionnaire available. Of a draft questionnaire, sorry. Once we've gathered all that, then we get to our selection process, which is your shortlisting. Part of that is we just need to check whether that the nominations have been actually, the people who've been nominated accept the nomination. It's not always clear from the documentation that you get that people actually do accept the nomination. The committee also might need to decide whether we're going to accept applications. In the past, the committees have. And then we would need to, when we get to our short listing process, we'd need to decide the number of people we wanted to shortlist. And then to facilitate the process, the support staff capture all the CVs and then we'll summarize them into various headings to make it easier for you to refer to the document. Another issue to flag is the management of late CVs. The committee needs to decide whether what they're going to do with late CVs, will they accept them or not accept them. So we need, when the CVs come in, we need to note the date at which we receive the CVs. Okay. There's also the process of screening, and I'm talking about screening, not vetting. Screening will normally entail getting a police report from the SAPS, a report from the State Security Agency, and then also one from our HR looking at the educational qualifications. The question around here is the committee will need to decide whether they want to screen all candidates before shortlisting or whether they want to screen those once they're shortlisted. And then obviously, depending on the number of CVs you have, it's going to either, you know, it'll take longer. If you've got a lot of CVs to screen, it's going to take longer than fewer CVs. And the interview process is fairly straightforward. We would need to just to consider the date of the interviews, the length of the interviews, if the committee is going to consider the interview questions beforehand as a committee, or people just going to ask the questions that they want to ask. One of the things that we would also need to consider is whether we are going to hold the interviews over one day or over a number of days. The feeling in the previous Parliament was that it could actually create some kind of prejudice because people, if it's being broadcasted, then people are able to see or follow other people's interviews and they get the questions up front. So there's no sense, you know, the people who come later are better prepared than the people who come first. And then we also need to decide whether we want to broadcast a process. And then the final part is just our deliberations. Ideally, they should take place as soon as possible after the interview process so that the interviews are fresh in the committee's mind. And then we adopt our report, and it goes to the House where it will be deliberated on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Silkstone. Honourable members, that is the suggested process. I think there are areas that we might want to sift out for discussion that needs a decision of the committee. But I will first start by accepting hands for clarity-seeking questions, so that we don't discuss what you do not understand. So So time is open for clarity seeking questions. Honorable Self, Honorable Janje, Honorable Mofuke, those three. In that order, Honorable Self.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm actually addressing myself to the draft practice notice rather than the overhead. And dealing with paragraph 5.5, what does a fit and proper person mean? There's certain suggestions there that one takes into account when one assesses fit and proper. Now, the one glaring omission there, I would suggest, is that they should also take into account any inquiry that has been held. Because if you look at the Simulani case, for example, it wasn't a court of law that made that decision. It was, in fact, an inquiry that found that that person had a case to answer. So I would respectfully suggest that commissions of inquiry or inquiries be added as a criteria.
Actually, mine is not clarity. I actually want to get into some proposals and interventions, so maybe I can come later after clarity. I'm ready to go there.
Honorable Mufuka.
Thank you, Chair. I think mine will also be on a suggestion looking at the presentation that was made. There's no clarity, but suggestions.
Honorable members, I think there would not be an objection to the suggestion made by Honorable Self. I think it enhances the process. Okay. Can we go to the suggestions? It's Honorable Janji, Honorable Mfukeng, Honorable Hisham Mohamed, Honorable Ngola,
yeah.
Honorable Dennis Breitenbach.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just have a couple of issues that I just want to raise to help us go forward. I think the first point that one wants to make is that I would have expected something in addition to what is the presentation, in my view, is not complete. We don't necessarily have the time with us. The contract of the Deputy Public Prosecutor ends on the 9th of December. So if you start from today, we've got 3 months and 13 days. In which we need to do everything else so that you don't have the lines and then there's a request to extend his stay. Now we've got these 3 months and 13 days and what is lacking therefore in your presentation is what I would have considered as a schedule that you would have drafted and prepared and presented here so that you don't call another meeting for us to come and look to a schedule. A schedule that says, Glenn is busy talking, man. It does bother me because I want you to listen. You're right. So, because that schedule would have given us all the milestones and say, from this date and this date, it's opening up for nominations. And we need to know because all of those things must get into our program. And then the next milestone, I hope it was done before, would then indicate at what point are we going to be doing the screening, the interviews. We need to consider that schedule, a very practical schedule with dates and times in it. I'm not sure you, maybe my colleague will speak to that, because when you do that, it will help us to understand for the public process. Are you giving it 2 weeks or are we giving it 3 to 4 weeks? I'm not sure if 2 weeks is enough for the public process, because you'd want to make this a transparent process, completely transparent, so that the outcome and the product, there's a complete buy-in, rather than just who we have in Parliament. So I'm emphasizing, Chair, that schedule. And I think it would be good to use this process, because if Parliament is able to start and finish an appointment process of a public protector with the detailed processes that you have in 3 months, because I always have a problem with all government departments that take 18 months to fill a vacancy of a director, of a chief director. And the requirements are not as comprehensive as you have here. So as Parliament, as part of our oversight, that if we are able to do things in 3 months, there's no reason why the filling of a chief director must take a year. Because when you come to annual report, you are going to get that. They'll tell you of vacancies of over 12 months, and it's all about filling up vacancies and all of that. So I really want to make that point. But also, Chair, it might just be good to share with us, I hope it does exist, because when you say the public protector delegates certain powers to the deputy public protector, is there currently such a practice? Do we have an example of what has been delegated to Kevin Malunga as a deputy public protector by the current PP? Or is he just operating on a basis of being phoned every day? Do this, don't do this. Well, that would help for us, and I hope it does exist. If it doesn't, I will consider that as a very poor practice, I think, from where you, I'm asking if you could also, because that is not necessarily, those delegations are at the discretion of the public, they are not in any of the acts and legislation. So just for us to get that information shared. My last point, Chair, is why we need to insist on being tied on the 3 months. The person we are going to get in December or start in January, that person would need, if it's Naidu of Kasak, as an example, you would need a month's notice. Okay, so you calculate that. Obviously, if it's an MP like Richard Janji, I would not need that. That's a far example, but I'm making it. Because I'm sure we're not looking for somebody who's sitting there doing nothing. If that person is there, it will be a great bonus. But the likelihood is that it must be somebody that we're going to have to dig somewhere else to get into this. I thank you, Chair.
Chief Whip of the Majority Party, I think somebody is applying for a redeployment. Honorable Mfokeng.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I will just start where my colleague left, especially about the public were given 1 or 2 weeks to comment. And we'll suggest that it should be 3 weeks for public, and then 1 week for portfolio committee to look at that. And I'm looking at this, looking at the management of public participation, because public participation is a constitutional mandate, and we need to be sure that our own people, everybody, black and white, and all languages, understand what is happening. Because we know the responsibility of a public protector and the deputy. At the end, they go to the ordinary people, but they don't know how they were appointed. That is our first one. On the second one, it says that screening, the candidate should be made aware that they may be screened. It should not be may. It must. It's a must that we have to request on this. And the last one, I think it will be on the issue of saying that the languages of the advertisements. When we advertise, let us make sure it reaches all our people in all languages, even in Braille, and go to every sector, so that we don't say that we don't know how they came to be interviewed. it must be something that is known by all citizens of South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mofokeng, Honorable Hisham Mohamed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My colleagues have covered some of the areas, so I won't repeat. Let me just make further suggestions for approval as requested by the colleague from the Secretariat. We agree with the 3 weeks. It often happens that civil society get these notices quite late. Those who are active here at Parliament, they do get it naturally, but there seems to be not an enthusiasm to distribute, and so it will be left to the parties, I'm sure, to distribute the ads. On the selection criteria, firstly, let me, the African National Congress would broadly accept this proposal as presented here, bar the few amendments or proposals we're making now. Now, on the selection criteria itself, we have been asked to whether we agree on the number of candidates to be shortlisted. I think we should rather leave that open-ended because it will be dependent on a number of factors, such as the number of applications received, the time frame that Honorable Janji was talking about that needs to be reflected, etc. Remember, the courts have basically expressed itself on this point, and that is on a number of judgments. It must be practical, rational, and reasonable. Those are the broad criteria, hence it is quite discretionary, and then we leave it open-ended. Secondly, on the management of late CVs, again, another one, depending, and therefore that one should also be left open-ended. Normally, it's peremptory, no late CVs will be accepted, it's normally in the ad that is generally put there, but there could be other practical reasons for which the applicant cannot be blamed. Okay, it could be postage, it could be impracticalities, etc. So again, there we can borrow from what happened in the previous committees. Jay, the selection criteria is quite straightforward, as prescribed, but when it comes to the screening, our suggestion would be that only shortlisted candidates be screened because of the time frame for the necessary law enforcement agencies. In our case, we'll be limited to time frames. So only selected, or rather shortlisted, as a joint, not the long list. Then when it comes to the length of the interviews, again, we could decide that closer to time. Again, it depends how many candidates we decided eventually to shortlist. Dependent on that, as you know. And interview questions to be discussed by the committee before the interview, I think that should be done, but it should be in camera. In other words, it should be in camera, it should be in a closed meeting, for obvious reasons to protect the integrity of the process itself. Right? And I'm sure our public will understand that. They will hear the question in any case when we ask it. On the issue of whether the interviews will be broadcast, normally tradition has it that it has been broadcast. We'll just have to work out the challenge raised about candidates and where candidates see each other or hear each other. That's a matter I don't have an answer today. We'll consult further on that one. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mohamed, Honorable Khan.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think honorable members have covered a lot of significant aspects as it relates to the process that was tabled before us. I think for record purposes, we endorse the process, of course, with the amendments that are proposed here in this meeting, Chair. And the sooner the committee secretariat works on the program, so that we are able to meet the targets that which even Honorable Janji was alluding unto, the better. It is as urgent as yesterday, given this. And Chair, equally, given the current PDP in that office, we can really use a second hand there, given the current situation, the PDP in that office. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Mola. Honorable Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the only way that I'm covered by the Honourable Danke that I agree with him that he sits around doing nothing. Apart from that, no. On the issue of preparation, the screening, Christina's written, candidates should be made aware that they may be screened. I think they should be made aware that they will be screened. And, of course, I agree that only shortlisted candidates should be screened. The logistics of anything else would be just... I may have misunderstood the Honourable Mohammed. Did he suggest that the interview process should be in camera? Well, that is in camera. Oh, I see. All right. Because, I mean, it must obviously be a...
Question on the questions that should be in camera.
It must
the
be a public proceedings, yes. And then the time for screening should just be sufficient to allow public interest organizations, NGOs, to also do some screening because they were extremely helpful in the appointment of the public protector with the work that they did. So, you know, 2 to 3 weeks should be sufficient for that. For the rest, that's it. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. There seems to be no differences of views. In fact, I think it would be important for Ms. Silson to consolidate all these views because, one, we should have a proposed program that takes into consideration that by the 9th of December, we must have a deputy public protector. That should take into account that we are rising on the 20th of September and end of November, early December. So we don't have time. And I think there is a general agreement on the 3 weeks for public and then we... I don't think there's a debate on the issue of the languages, but I'm not sure about your budget. The shortlisted candidate will be screened. I think there's a general agreement on that. Maybe, Honorable Hisham, on this issue of the closing date, don't you think that if we don't become firm on it, it might be opened up the process for some form of abuse, because you might have a situation where a person might, a CV can arrive for whatever reason a day before the screening, but generally how will we prevent abuse of the process?
Chair, as I proposed, the practice has been that in the ad, the advertisement, normally it indicates no late applications will be considered. And that we stick just to that, that's what I was implying. Meaning, generally no, but an applicant could make out the case, as has happened in case law, where they are not to blame. In those cases, we leave it for a matter as it arises. But in general, we have a closing date and we emphasize on it. That's what I was proposing.
Can I suggest that with all these comments, that a consolidated program be presented tomorrow to us before we deal with other matters of the day tomorrow, because we would want to sign off the advert as soon as possible because the time is very tight. It's very tight. So, Honorable Ms. Silkstone, tomorrow can we have a consolidated proposal with a program of action that will be presented to us tomorrow?
On the number of candidates that has to be shortlisted, do we agree on that one, or maybe we left that one as it is?
We said it will depend on the number of applications. There will be a various factors that we will take into account.
Or we look into that one later.
Okay. Honorable Nibot Drachen?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Can we also include tomorrow a draft advertisement so that we can have a look through if it's possible, please?
In fact, after the consolidated program proposal that Ms. Stone will be working on, the next thing it will be to deal with the issue of the advertisements, so that the committee can also decide by when, and then what is the closing date. It will come here. It will come here. So tomorrow this will be our first item before we deal with the PAIA and other issues.
Honorable Janja. Because that allows us to have a clear September, because the adverts kickstart almost everything. So we can't prolong that particular milestone. So thank you for that.
Honorable members, that brings us to the end of our meeting, but I had asked that members of parliament remain behind so that we can deal with the issue of the constitution of the subcommittee on correctional services. The meeting is adjourned.